So we've heard of people who kayaked around Lake Superior, walked around it, even ran around it pushing a baby carriage. Now Mike Stout of Prior Lake has paddled across the lake, and he's on the phone to tell us all about it. Welcome to the Roadhouse, Mike.
Hey, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Better still, how are you after such an arduous paddle?
I'm doing great. Still getting over it. Pretty exciting.
So what day did you do this? It was earlier this month, yes?
Yeah. Well, you know, last year across Lake Michigan, and it was a 50-mile trek across the lake. And I thought, well, what's next? And then Lake Superior came to mind.
All right, so I have lots of questions. First of all, what made you decide to attempt this?
Well, I think it was just the next big challenge. And, you know, I love the sport of kayaking. It combines outdoors, water, adventure, fitness. And it was the next big challenge. And love big lakes, that's for sure. Mm. Nothing bigger than Lake Superior.
That's right. Okay, so I have so many thoughts racing through my head right now about this paddle. Can you just first sort of walk people through how it came down? So you started off from the Pigeon River area?
Yeah, there's a boat ramp not too far from the Canadian border on the Pigeon River, and took off from there. And from there, it's about a 22.5-mile journey to Isle Royale. And having studied the maps and the weather, they're forecasting the wind or the sun to peak out around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's supposed to be nice and calm and windy. And we got there, and about 5:30, the sun came out, beating hot, beautiful day, and I took off. And began heading down the Pigeon River, and just a beautiful route. On the right-hand side, you got the steep cliffs on the Minnesota side. On the north side, you've got the islands. And then you head off into the open water, just as calm, as peaceful, tranquil, and hit the island around 11 o'clock at night, and it was pitch black, and had to find a place to rest for the evening.
So did you have anybody on the island waiting for you, or did you just, did you have a particular spot you were headed for on Isle Royale?
You know, I was looking for a place on the southeast island. Now, there was nobody there, just a total solo paddle. And getting there, you know, it's pitch black, and the shoreline's pretty rocky, so I scanned the side, the shoreline for an opening, and found a place to camp out. On the landing, and then about 15 yards in, I set tent for the night, and I was all set. But when you're paddling at night, you know, you have to have, you know, faith in your compass and yourself, and never doubt either, that's for sure. It's pretty cool.
So you said the sun came out around 5 p.m., and you headed off to Isle Royale. So does that mean that as you were paddling, the stars were out?
It was. It was a perfectly starlit night. And, you know, the sunset, had a beautiful sunset over the horizon, just colorful, just perfect conditions, all they're going to ask for. Mm.
So do you have, like, a backup navigational system besides your compass? I mean, are you well-versed as a paddler with, you know, reading the stars and knowing which direction you're going and all of that? Do you have a sort of belt and suspenders for your adventures on the kayak?
No, it's totally dependent on my compass. Never doubt that compass. That was it.
Okay, so that was the first leg. So you got to Isle Royale at about 11 p.m. You rested until the following morning, and you took off. Tell us about that next leg.
The second leg was a totally different experience. I woke up on Isle Royale at Grace Harbor. Again, the sun was bright, the temperature's warm, the water's calm. It's pretty encouraging. I was excited. It's all that I planned for. But as I left the protection of Grace Harbor and just off of Cumberland Point, the weather takes a turn for the worse. You know, the skies turn gray, the waves begin to churn, the temperature drops. And then into the strong currents, I find it hard to remain maintaining direction. And thoughts of concern begin to creep in, you know, but you just can't let it happen. You just have to remain confident and diligent, keep on pushing through. But over the next 20 hours, I faced incrementally greater challenges with the wind, the waves, the current. Then there's the factors of cold, wetness, sleep deprivation, and the threat of hypothermia. It was a challenge. no denying it. And it's all they're going to handle.
Oh. All right, so let's get specific about your gear. So Lake Superior is frigid. You're paddling, your hands are going to be getting wet. So what are you wearing?
Well, it was so warm that morning, and the weather forecast was for pretty good weather. So I had my two layers of my wetsuit. The first layer was a 3.0 mil neoprene suit, and the second layer is 1.5. So I was pretty well protected. I have waterproof gloves. So I was pretty well tucked in. I could have used another layer, but I didn't keep it out because I thought it'd be a little bit warmer. So I was cold along the way, but just enough.
All right. So how do you took off at about 10 a.m. You didn't make Houghton until the following morning. How do you stay awake? Do you try to catch a little rest, or are you worried that the currents are going to take you way off course?
Well, there's no resting. I take a break every hour, maybe 5-10 minutes, where I eat, hydrate, look at my compass again, get my readings on my GPS to make sure I'm on track. But you just can't rest. The journey took me 3 days and 2 nights, much longer than I expected, and I didn't know what was behind me, so I keep on paddling to stay ahead of it. And it was a bear, no doubt about it.
Hardest paddle that you've had so far?
By far, okay. By far. I would say late evening, because I was kind of wet and cold, I began thinking about hyperthermia. I was tired. You don't sleep, and the stress of the trip is pretty overwhelming. But along the way, to keep alert, the splash cold water from the lake on my face. Then I try to move my shoulders, move my legs, keep active, shout a few prayers along the way, just to keep alert and focused and full of energy.
All right. So the second night, you said that the sky got gray. Did you have stars or any moonlight or anything like that second night?
The whole evening after I left, let's say it was around 10:30, I'd say about 12:30, 1 o'clock, it turned gray and stayed gray the entire way, but never had the view of the stars or the sunset. So it was dismal, not the best conditions. So unlike Lake Michigan the previous night, it was just a struggle all the way. Compared to the two trips, Lake Michigan, it was really spiritual, really personal. The Lake Superior Crossing was mostly about thoughts of survival.
That's Lake Superior for you.
It's a beast.
It's a beast. It is. All right. So what I read about your trip that sort of, I don't know, I guess I just didn't think about it, was the currents that you ran into on Lake Superior. Tell us more about that.
I knew there were currents, but I never thought it'd be a factor. I had a friend from the Twin Cities here. He's got some friends that are meteorologists in Duluth, and they said it was the currents I had to worry about, that they were 3 or 4 times stronger than the winds. And because they were so strong, they were working against me. I'm going south by southeast. The current's going north by northeast, 3 to 4 times stronger than the winds, and I was battling those things all along. It was confusing. I just couldn't figure it out. And, I guess maybe ignorance is bliss because I was never fearful of it, but it was the biggest surprise, the biggest challenge overall.
Can you just tell folks, what is causing the current in Lake Superior? So it's not the wind.
Well, I was told by a friend is basically the aftermath of the previous storms, and I wish I was a better student of the current and how that worked, because that was a factor I just did not study and overlooked.
Okay. Wow. All right. Tell us about the equipment that you used, your kayak and paddle and all of that sort of thing, and what got you through.
Yeah, I got a great kayak. It's a 17-foot, 2-inch kayak from NC Kayaks. It was custom-made from a manufacturer in Tacoma. It's a lightweight, fiberglass composite. Weighs about 46 pounds. And my best decision besides the kayak was the week before my trip. I went to the store and bought a new paddle. They're the same brand, the same size, with a lightweight composite material. And because it was lighter and stronger, that saved my shoulders, my hands, and really kept me going. Because I didn't plan for 21 and a half hours on the second leg.
Mm.
It was about 9 hours longer than I expected. But if it wasn't for the change in the paddle, it may have been a tougher journey or worse.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of backup equipment did you have with you? I mean, what if something had happened to that paddle? Did you have a way of repairing it? Did you have an extra paddle tucked away? You know, you said that you ate and all of that. How much poundage-wise of extra equipment did you have with you?
Well, to my access, it's a slim kayak, just wider than your hips. You really can't reach beyond anything in front of you or behind you besides the food. But I had an extra paddle attached to the top of the kayak and back where it had strength attached to it. If I lost the kayak paddle or broke, I had the second one in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the other backup there really wasn't. I had with me, of course, the Marine Ship to Shore radio if I needed help. But it's all about your kayak and your paddle and then your conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, that's all you can depend on.
Yeah. Did you have a spot beacon with you?
No. No.
Okay.
I was able to put my phone, my GPS location, so as long as I knew where I was, and that was kind of disappointing. As I was traveling, I thought I was much further ahead than I was. And I looked at my compass or looked at my GPS setting, I was maybe a fraction of the distance that I thought I'd be. So,
wow.
It was a reality check. And then I checked again, thinking I'd make more progress. And it was tough.
Mm.
It was tough.
I got to remind people that we're talking with Mike Stout, kayaker who made the trip from the Pigeon River by Grand Portage in Minnesota across Lake Superior to Houghton, Michigan. Oh, Mike, I got to hand it to you. I mean, I could not imagine doing that journey without a accompanying boat. What made you decide to do it solo? Is it because you'd had a vastly different experience crossing Lake Michigan?
Well, I think a couple of things here. Lake Michigan was a very pleasant, although challenging, spiritual. I planned on good weather, across Lake Superior. But I didn't want to be constrained to someone else's schedule or be too much of a burden. So I thought solo would be the way to go, and it proved all right. The good thing is that if, in case there's an emergency, we have the best Coast Guard in the world. Those guys are fantastic. So if I had to call them up and ask for help, I had confidence they would make it in time.
Mm. So had you alerted them before you took off? They knew where you were planning to go, what route, and about when?
They knew, and others were aware. I got to tell you one thing here, though. My plan was to leave Thursday around 3 o'clock from Isle Royale, or Wednesday, excuse me. And I would leave early only if the conditions were really good. Otherwise, I'd stay around Isle Royale, take some pictures, take my time, take it all in. And I tried to call my girlfriend that I was leaving early around 10:30. Well, the cell phone didn't go through.
Mm.
Fortunately, because I was thinking that the way things were going, the weather, I might be hitting Michigan around midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. Well, I missed that by about half a day, eight hours. So I made that call. I'm sure she'd be worried about where I was and being 1, 2, 3 hours late. So the blessing in disguise.
Mm. Oh, my goodness. has she forgiven you?
I tell you what, I'm real lucky. She told me that she didn't like the idea, as most people did. I told them my plan. They shook their heads and made gestures. They thought it was a really risky or worse idea. But she supported me. I trained for it, put the hours in, studied the maps and the weather forecast. So she was there for me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, that's great.
And the best part of the trip was turning towards the end, and there she was waiting for me, and what a great surprise. And,
Oh, that's awesome. All right, so I have to ask, what's next for you? Do you have another long-distance paddle in mind?
I'm still thinking about it. I haven't decided. I got one idea that's pretty big and bold, but maybe impossible, but I can't share right now just because it's too risky or it's a ways out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the near-term plan would be do a 100-mile paddle overnight on the rivers here, then maybe do 500 miles over 3 or 4 days. And then for the next big risky adventure, I just don't know. Okay. I think it's time for me to let this thing sink in and just appreciate what I accomplished.
And recover. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, Mike Stout, thank you so much for joining us on the Roadhouse tonight. I loved hearing about your adventure. And please keep us posted next time you, when that mysterious next adventure gets more solid, let us know.
I will do that. All right. Hey, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.